Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 248. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffey is not with me. He is back home in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. I look forward to seeing him out there very soon. Meanwhile, I am in Tokyo, Japan for Bellator 237. It is Ryzen FF20 fight week as well, and I'm covering a little bit of the pre-fight card there as well. I will not be here for the Ryzen card itself. I will actually be back home at that point, and we'll be watching on television. I'm a hardcore like that. I do like the Ryzen cards as well, but I am here for Bellator 237. A quick little jaunt. Flew out on Christmas Day. Hated to say goodbye to the wife and kid, but kind of a cool way to wrap up the year and to wrap up the decade, to be honest with you. I mean, Fedor Emelianenko and Quentin Rampage Jackson at Saitama Super Arena. You know what? It's funny. I'm stoked for it, you know, and I can understand, you know, any naysayers out there, what have you, about what the fight means and, you know, with Rampage as a heavyweight, you know, how motivated is he? We'll get to that here momentarily. But I can understand, you know, criticisms of it or whatever. Is this a big-time main event? But to me, man, this is all about nostalgia. To be honest with you, it is a big-time main event. I mean, it is two of the biggest stars in MMA history, and they're back in the place that made them. I mean, back in Japan, Saitama Super Arena, of course, home of Pride for so many years, and they both had so many, you know, great performances, not only in that building, but all over Japan. And I'm excited to be here for it, man. I really am. I think it's going to be a fun way to shut down the decade. You know, we've been doing all this end-of-decade talk at MMA Junkie, and of course, we've been rolling out the fighters of the decade, which by the time this comes out, you'll have seen is John Jones. That's who we selected as our number one. And if you want to go check out my piece that I wrote on John Jones and did a little video there that Abby Saban edited together in fine fashion, as you would expect. But, you know, we've been doing the end of the decade fighters and counting that down. And we've also got some other content coming out. I was counting down the not necessarily a countdown, but just re-going through some of the biggest moments in and out of the cage for the whole 10 years. And it was cool to I very rarely sit back and you know, reminisce like that. But to go back through an entire decade and to kind of relive it year by year and to think back through those memories about how they happened and what was going on at the time and what certain fights meant and what certain developments meant, It was pretty cool to do. I really did enjoy it. And actually on the flight over here, I had a couple of layovers. Booked the flight kind of late. So for me, it was Las Vegas to Phoenix, Phoenix to San Francisco, San Francisco to Tokyo. So at least one more flight than you would normally expect. But I had to save a couple of bucks at the end of the year. You know how that goes. But, you know, I had some time to kill. And it was funny as I was thinking about all those decade accomplishments. I put it out on social media. But I decided, I was like, man, I wonder how many of those – you know, big UFC cards I was at. And so I went down and just went through year by year the UFC schedule. And as best I can tell, and it's a good estimate, I believe I was at 246 UFC cards during the past decade. So it's crazy, man. You know, you talk, oh, you're at the fights all the time. But, man, when you put it together like that, it's pretty wild. And, of course, that doesn't even cover all the Strikeforce, the Bellator, the – you know, everything else that happened through there. So pretty wild decade. And to be able to wrap it up with Fedor Emelianenko versus Quentin Rampage Jackson. Listen, man, you're not being able to you're not being asked to pay money for this. It's not a pay-per-view product. You know, if that was the case, if Bellator was trying to gouge you with a little pay-per-view or something like that, I could understand how you might say, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. But as just a way to wrap up the year, I mean, amazing. And like I said, wrap up the decade. Of course, some other real recognizable talent as well. Michael Chandler was supposed to fight Benson Henderson. That ends up being Sydney Outlaw instead. But Sydney Outlaw, quite an interesting character. Not the name of Benson Henderson, but still an interesting fight nonetheless. You get Michael Venom Page in Japan, which I am so happy that this fight is happening. I remember, you know, the boys at MMA Junkie Radio, you know, we were having those spinning back click episodes and talking about wanting to see Michael Venom Page here in Japan and assuming it was just going to be too quick of a turnaround, and it got done against Shinsho Anzai, who will do his best to put him in a fight. Certainly will be a little bit outclassed on the feet if he's not able to make it kind of dirty. But nonetheless, I mean, a chance to see MVP here in Japan, I think, could be pretty special. And then Lorenz Larkin versus Keita Nakamura as well. So another, recognizable name. Goichi Yamauchi is on here against Darren Cruikshank. That could be a fun card. And then, of course, you get all the Ryzen fights as well. It's interesting how this fight card is being constructed, Bellator 237, because it very much is almost like two events happening together. It's like the two organizations are kind of, they're partnering together, but they're very much taking care of, their own sections of the lineup. So Bellator 237 is going to start at 10 p.m. Eastern on Saturday night. Now, that's actually noon Eastern here, or noon Eastern, noon local here in Tokyo on Sunday morning. But it's kind of cool. It's starting with the Bellator fights, and then those Ryzen fights afterwards, those are going to be classified as post-limbs, and it seems like they will stream live on the Bellator YouTube channel. So, of course, Ryzen has a local domestic broadcast deal, but they don't have an international broadcast deal. They do Fight TV for their big pay-per-view events, but this being what it is, kind of prelims, whatever, I don't think they wanted to do pay-per-view. So my understanding is this will stream live on Bellator's YouTube channel. So, kind of a wild weekend, but I dig it, man. Wouldn't have it any other way. So happy to be over here. Feeling a ton better. Apologize if my voice is still a little rough to listen to. Definitely still a touch sick, no question about it. But right now it's just, a little bit of cough and some, stuffy nose, that sort of thing, man. Last week, I thought I was dying. So what a difference a week can make. I was just bad out last week. So, I will say, by the way, apologize to anybody if it seemed like clickbait, because the structure of the episode was last week, the title was The End of an Era. And then the description was, for nearly 5 years, through rain, sleet, and snow, the roadshow was there for you. Alas, it seems all things must come to an end. And it's funny because I put that text together because I didn't feel like yesterday. I felt like last week was the first time we didn't deliver a full episode. It was just me meekly trying to make my way through being sick. And therefore, I didn't know if we should even count that as a full episode. And so I thought our streak of 247 consecutive Thursdays had come to an end. First off, let me just say that I had quite a bit of people reach out to me on social media and said, John, don't worry about it. You made it. You put together an episode. It was half an hour. I mean, hey, that's still a good episode for some shows. So it counts. The streak continues, and I appreciate that. But it was funny because I sent the text off to Cold Coffee to get it edited, and he was like, "Are you sure that's not like clickbait?" And I was like, "Well, I don't think it's clickbait. I mean, I'm just saying what I feel. I think it's legit." And then right away, as soon as it's published, my wife actually hit me up, and she said, "Are you guys done doing the podcast? Is that it? Is the podcast over?" That was hilarious. I mean, what? To be honest, to pull back the curtain a little bit, she doesn't listen to the podcast. She's got enough mixed martial arts in her life, man. She doesn't want anything to do with it. But she saw the text, I guess, somehow, and she thought, is that it? Are you guys ending the podcast? So I apologize to anybody if that came across as clickbait. It definitely wasn't. I thought I was just conveying the fact that I was worried our streak had come to an end. But as far as I'm concerned, the streak continues. But enough about that. Let's get into Bellator 237. An exciting week out here in Tokyo. Scott Coker, of course, is fired up about this, man. He's got a history of promoting events here, and I think he understands the market. And from what it sounds like, ticket sales doing very, very good, which is not something that we could say in the past with UFC events. So I got to say, even though I had a chance to come out here a couple times and see some UFC events, they'll admit it to you. The partner that they had here and the business they did here, they didn't necessarily love it. The UFC didn't necessarily hit a home run here, and that's why they had to kind of withdraw from the market a little bit. And that's fine. I mean, it's not a massive global market, so it's not like they can't survive without crushing it and hitting a home run here. But it sounds like, you know, ticket sales and fan interest is pretty high in this event here locally. So I'm actually excited to get in there on Sunday and see how the building felt, you know, versus UFC events, for instance, which, you know, ran the gauntlet a little bit, you know, kind of petered out at the end, but definitely had some incredible moments. I mean, Wanderlei Silva, Brian Stann, an all-time classic. Was happy to be able to see Wanderlei Silva perform in a fight like that in Saitama Super Arena. I mean, there was definitely some nostalgic feelings going on there. Man, I always thought that would have been an amazing moment for Wanderlei Silva to call it a career, but of course that certainly wasn't the case, and it kind of it's been a long meandering road since then. But we'll get a chance to see Quentin Rampage Jackson perform here, and of course we saw him here before, and it wasn't exactly memorable. But this is a different Quentin Rampage Jackson. The energy that he is bringing to the table is something different, to say the least. So had a chance to speak to him just earlier. The media day wrapped up just a little bit ago. And when I say media day, by the way, it was a pretty big media day in terms of Japanese media. English-speaking media was basically just me and the MMA fighting crew. So we kind of got our own little area. And it was kind of nice, actually. It was just like a little kind of private one-on-one. So Rampage came in with some energy. Now, Rampage had a CBD MD shirt on, but once he realized he was doing a video interview, he wanted to have some Monster logo representation. And so he looks around to his crew right away, and he's like, "What do we got? Do we got a T-shirt? What do we got?" And they're like, "No, we got this, you know, a handkerchief right here, bandana, or whatever you want to call it." That's the same thing, right? Just one's way less cool than the other. But anyway, they get this bandana, and he's trying to figure out how he wants to put it on. You know, does he want to wrap it around his head and, you know, make it a little headband or whatever, or does he want to do something different with it? And he decides, you know what, I'm going to put it on outlaw style. So he puts it on like he's about to go rob a bank in the Wild West. And so that I wanted to set that visual, because this interview starts with us talking about visually how he's looking, and it progresses from there. It goes from, this is Rampage going full Rampage. I think that's pretty much the only way to preface it, man. This is Rampage in fine form.
Well, Rampage, first things first, we got to ask. I mean, it's quite the appearance that you've got here. What's with the bandana, the mask you got going there?
Man, I got this mask and this bandana on, man. I got this bandana on. Y'all know what's up. Y'all know what time it is. I'm here to steal the show. I'm back in Japan, baby. This is my stomping ground. This is where I got my motherfucking name from. Japan, baby. And I'm black. I mean, I'm back. Y'all already knew I was black, right? I'm back. I'm back up in this bitch.
Well, I was going to ask you if you get emotional. I mean, this is a big card. I mean, you're a superstar in Japan, back at the scene of the crime, Saitama Super Arena. I was going to ask you if this was an emotional night for you, but it seems like maybe you answered that already.
Yeah, it's emotional. The Saitama Super Arena is the first place I ever fought here in Japan, when I fought Sakuraba. Right after I got out of jail, they bailed me out of jail, flew my ass to Japan, and they lured me down in a cage. With Sakuraba, you know, because Pride was the assholes that just bailed me out of jail, so they had to capitalize on it. And the only person that knows why I went to jail is, Chris. The only person that knows why I went to jail right before I went to Japan to fight in Pride is Chris Brennan. He the only person to know why. I'm going to leave it at that.
Is that a story that it's time to tell?
It's a story. There's a story behind it. Y'all ask Chris Brennan. He won't tell the truth, but I will.
Was Chris Brennan involved?
Chris Brennan was involved. I was training with Chris Brennan at the time, because it's a whole big story. I don't know if y'all ready for this. But the story is, I was training with Tiki and Tito Ortiz in Huntington Beach. But the guy, the asshole, the dick face, the big chin, moon face asshole that started me to training, he the one who started me to training. You know, I was loyal to him. He left the gym because Tito came. And he was jealous of Tito, so he went over to Chris Brennan. And like, he got me started in MMA. So what I do? Be loyal, because I'm a wolf. We loyal. I went to, you know, the same gym with him. I went to Chris Brennan's gym. I love some of the guys over there. I'm still good friends with a lot of guys like Tracy Hansen, a lot of guys and stuff from over there, some good stand-up people. But to be quite honest, it was kind of like a fish out of water. And I kind of got reminded that I was black every day that I was training over there. I'm just being honest. It's Orange County, back in the, you know, early 2000s. And I'm like, okay, I know I'm black, so what the deal? Let's go. What's up? Anyway, long story short, Chris Brennan was training me, and somehow he asked Pride if somehow I don't make it to the show, can he fight Soccer Robert? All I know is I got arrested getting on a damn airplane because I got in trouble in college. I wasn't supposed to leave the country that I forgot all about. They put money in my face, said I'm finna fight in Japan, a country full of hot Asian women, and I'm getting paid? I'm getting paid? You think I'm gonna remember that I'm not supposed to leave the fucking country? I forgot all about that shit I did in college. God damn, that was college. I'm a grown ass man. They trying to remind me of some shit I did in college. I forgot I wasn't supposed to leave the country. And all I know is when I get to Japan, Chris Brennan, they know I got bailed out. They know I got to Japan. All I know is Chris Brennan got his fight kit, like he ready to fight. That's all I gotta say.
That's old school.
Man, why y'all on the side filming this shit? Fuck wrong with y'all? Right, what kind of publication y'all with?
Rampage, what's been getting ready for this fight been like for you, man? I know how much, you know, respect you have for Fedor and admiration for him. So I got to wonder, has it been difficult or challenging, or has it been exciting for you to get ready for this
fight? Well, I'm going to tell y'all something straight up. I've been trying to tell you guys for years. Maybe y'all don't believe me, but I'm a Gemini, and I'm two people. So, yeah, it's been kind of hard for me to mentally prepare and get ready for this fight because, you know, you guys know how I like to knock people out of my team. Like, oh, you got to knock him out. You got to knock him out. And me being a big fan of Fedor, I'm thinking that's the last thing he needs to be is get knocked out, like, right away and stuff like that. But none of that matter because when I get in that cage, Rampage don't have no friend. I don't even like that motherfucker. Nobody like Rampage. Rampage don't like nobody. So it don't matter. You know, I'm cool. I love everybody. I respect everybody. But Rampage don't give a fuck. He just like to fight. That's all. He loves to fight. He don't care. He don't care who it is. Like what y'all don't know about me is that I've been, even before my professional career, I've been in over 1,000 fights growing up. Cause I got a cousin, God rest his soul now, that I grew up in the hood. And my cousin is like 6 months younger than me. And my mama told me, ever since I was in Pampas, me and him been fighting. And we grew up fighting. And I remember, I don't remember my first fight, but I just remember growing up fighting. And we lived close together. And it's 365 days in a year, right? And out of those 365 days, we would fight at least 200 times in a year. And I fought him from, my mom said, from Pampas all the way up till I moved away to went to college. Till I turned 17. At 17, I moved out of the neighborhood. And I started wrestling. He wouldn't fuck with me no more after that. You know what I'm saying? So and fighting him and fighting everybody else in the hood, all the bullies. I've been in over 1,000 fights in my life. Like, Rampage love fighting. Quinn, you know, I like making people laugh. I like joking around. I like entertaining people. That's what I like to do. And I like fucking. And video game. That ain't no secret. But Rampage, he don't fuck. He don't play video games. He just like to fight.
How long can Rampage stay in control of the two? Because, you know, this is the Fedor retirement tour. Are we starting on the Rampage retirement tour? Or has Rampage still got plenty of energy left?
Man, I still got it. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I still love the sport. I still love the sport. I'm not even really focusing on that. When it's time for me to lay it down, I'm going to lay it down. Like, Father Time is one opponent that's gonna forever be undefeated. But just because somebody undefeated don't mean I ain't gonna go at it full speed. I'm headbutting Father Time all the time. You know what I'm saying? He ain't defeat me yet. You know what I'm saying? I ain't gonna give up. I ain't no quitter. But I know I'm going against somebody that's undefeated.
In the meantime, though, how special is this to you? I mean, two all-time greats, and not only meeting, but doing it back in Saitama, doing it in Japan. I mean, do you feel like this is kind of an iconic moment? I mean, we're closing out the decade. I mean, do you feel like this is a special moment in MMA history?
It's a special moment in MMA history. No matter what the naysayers say, the guys who's never going to do anything in their lives, the never has-beens, you want to say about two old guys getting in there, the true MMA fans are going to win because there's not going to be a loser. There's not going to be a loser. No matter who get their hand raised, there's not going to be a loser. Because when two legends get in there and do what they love and put on the show, the fans win. So, yes, we can't make it a draw. We both can't get our hands raised. Whoop-de-doo. Somebody got to win, somebody got to lose. I want to win. It's my daughter's birthday. I know he want to win. It's his daughter's birthday. Both our motivation is exact the same. You know what I'm saying? This is like will versus will. Like, who's going to lay down on their daughter's birthday? Like, what people don't know about fighting is always like that little voice in the back of your head that's telling you, like, all right, you go ahead, tap out. You can put yourself in bad position to tap out. I see it all the time. When I watch a fight, I see it, I'm like, oh, he put himself there so he can tap out. It's always that little voice in the back of your head. All right, go ahead, get choked out. Fuck it, you tired. You know what I'm saying? Oh, you getting your ass kicked. Go ahead and fall down. Like, you got knocked out, man. You getting a good paycheck. You know what I'm saying? It's always that shit in the back of your head what fans don't know. But when it's your daughter's birthday and she's watching and you fighting a dude and his daughter's birthday, all you can think about is, damn, we was fucking at the same time. I mean, you think about, you know what I'm saying, whose will is going to be stronger?
So wait, at one point, you were creating your daughter, and Beto was the other side of the world.
Creating his daughter. I was just wondering. I was wondering if he was putting his thumb in the asshole like I was doing. I was like, I don't know. What, is he a freak like me? It kind of ruined. Honestly, since I learned that, it kind of ruined my sex life. Because when I'm having sex now, all I do is think about Fedor. I think about, damn, is Fedor having sex right now? Thinking about me. Am I still hetero? I'm having sex with a girl, but thinking about Fedor having sex with a girl. What is this world coming
to? In those thoughts, does he wear the sweater, or how does it?
Yeah. I can see him with a straight face, no emotion on his face, with his ugly Christmas sweater on, doggy style of some chick. That's what's going through my mind every time I have sex. Like, no emotion on his face. He's doggy style of some chick, straight face. Not even looking at the back of her head. With that sweater on, nothing else.
Ray Rich, how do you think it's affect this fight plays out? I mean, we know that you took out his whole body of work, but now you're a heavyweight.
I'm a heavyweight.
You might be bigger than him. He might be faster than you, which we would have thought the other way around before. I mean, do you think he might have a power advantage, or do you think you might have heavyweight? I mean, how do you think this plays out now that you're a heavyweight?
Well, this is a good matchup because Fedor is the first true heavyweight that I've ever gone to face, in my opinion. I don't think I ever faced a true heavyweight. I've been fighting little bitty guys who faster than me and like can out wrestle me and you know, all this and out game plan me. But you know, Fedor's a true heavyweight, and I think it's gonna be a good test for me. I think he has speed, he has power, you know, and he's not shy, and he's good on the ground. He's a very, very dangerous opponent. And I meet this challenge head on. I think that I do some things very well that makes it a good matchup for me against Fedor.
You know, you said Father Time's coming. What do you want to accomplish? What's left for you to do before you feel comfortable laying it down and saying I've had enough? What are the things that you want to tick off the list?
If I'm gonna be 100% honest, my number one goal is to entertain people. I like entertaining people. But at the same time, all these years, I put my body in through a lot of pain. I'm, you know, there's a lot of things I can't do exactly the same because of this job of me entertaining people. I know when I get old, it's going to be a hard time. I probably got to get two new knees and hips and, you know, a couple of different elbows and all this stuff. So I don't think that I earn enough money. You know what I'm saying? I don't think that when I hear Mayweather fighting for $200 million and whatever, him and Conor McGregor and all this stuff, I'm thinking like, you know, I can, if I promote it right, I can sell tickets like that. So, you know, I've been ripped off a couple times by managers. I'm not gonna lie. I'm not gonna say no names because I'll probably get sued again. But I've been ripped off. I'm keeping it real. I don't gotta lie about that. Whoever think I'm lying about that, you know, kiss my black ass. I don't lie about shit like that. I've had millions stolen from me, millions. And I want to, before I retire, I want to recoup that back. Tiki Gawson, you know, with Arsenal, not only do I trust him and them, you know, wholeheartedly, because hell, I've been knowing Tiki for, you know, as long as I've been, you know, a professional fighter. But he sent me to a financial advisor, the right financial advisor, and they gave me like my you know, whatever, my achievement, whatever. They already making me money with my retirement. They proved to themselves, they proved like, oh, I can trust these people. These people are actually making me money. They're not having me sign these papers and sign this stuff. You know, I've been ripped off about with people. I'm thinking I'm doing the right thing. I'm thinking I'm signing college funds for my, you know, putting money away for my kids in the college thing, where it's not, you know, it's not going to be, you know what I'm saying? It's not going to be messed with. It's just going to make, you know what I'm saying? It's just going to make money just by the bank using, you know what I'm saying? And next thing you know, that is all a lie. You know, I'm thinking I'm being smart, but with the wrong people. So now I'm finally at the end, like near the end of my career, because, you know, I'm 41. And now I'm with the right people that can actually make my money grow. And they're teaching me how to make my money and make money. So now I don't got to be no male prostitute. I was going to have to get my elephant skin drawers out and saw back fucking fat bitches in Vegas. But now I can just keep doing what I love and fight.
All right, so there you have it, Quentin Rampage Jackson. I, you know, where do you even start with all that? It's cool. I really enjoyed it, man. I feel like there were some, you know, moments of real honesty from Rampage, but also some moments of real entertainment, man. The showman being the showman, and just giving us quite a story to talk about. You know, not much that we can write about, not much that we can play in any place that we're trying to monetize it. So, but interesting nonetheless. So, you know, as he was kind of walking out of the room afterwards, he's like, "Hey, I know everybody says I'm old, but you're going to miss me when I'm gone." And man, he definitely is a one of a kind character. So, was cool to see kind of Quentin Rampage Jackson being that vintage, Rampage. So, now as far as the fight itself, this is a heavyweight Rampage, and we'll see what that means. I think Nolan King from our website caught up with Sam Calavita earlier this week and said that, look, you know, this is going to be a Rampage that's still, it's not just an overweight Rampage. This is a Rampage that's going to have some power about him and that we've put some structure into. And, you know, they want to get him down to 205 at some point, but that this will be a prepared heavyweight. And that's good because, I mean, a heavyweight Rampage could just mean, a Rampage that isn't dialed in and focused. But it seems like this is an important fight for him and something that, you know, he wants to perform well in. So I'm intrigued by it. I mean, you know, right up front, both guys in their 40s, you know, they'll admit it. You know, we're not 100% in terms of, you know, vintage era, if you will. But certainly capable of doing big things. And you know, who's got the power advantage? Who's got the speed advantage? Does Rampage want to wrestle, or does he want to try to stand and trade? We'll see. We'll see. You know, and if this crowd is what we think it's going to be, you know, does that play a factor in anything? Well, will they get those vintage feels? And you know, will it impact somebody into wanting to do something special? I don't know. We'll see. I'm intrigued by it. Fedor Emelianenko did come and speak to us as well. I won't play you his audio. It is on YouTube if you want to check it out. Mike Kogan was translating for us. You know, Fedor's Fedor. He's very stoic. It's fun. I mean, there is still very much an aura around Fedor Emelianenko that anybody will tell you is still there. I mean, this guy is one of the all-time greats of the sport and one of the, you know, kind of mysterious figures, so to speak. So it's fun to talk to him, but, you know, it's not like he's going to give you any crazy stories or anything like that. He's not giving you bad answers, but he's not going to give you crazy, you know, wild answers either. He's going to be respectful. He's going to make sure that, you know, he's not offending anybody, I don't think. The wry little smile is always fun to watch there as well. But, you know, that is on our YouTube channel. It'll be on MMA Junkie as well. So, definitely, you know, worth checking out there to at least catch up on Fedor. The co-main event was supposed to be Michael Chandler versus Benson Henderson. Benson Henderson had to withdraw. Sidney Outlaw, a name that's kind of been bouncing around on the regional stage, and Dana White's Contender Series and CFFC, and you know, to recently Bellator, where he came out of the blocks in his debut and picked up a win over Roger Huerta. So the guy is moving along very, very quickly in terms of his opportunities under the Bellator banner. But Sidney Outlaw steps in against Michael Chandler, who suffered a defeat last time out, a very frustrating defeat. You know, one that he didn't necessarily agree with the stoppage in, but that saw him cede over his lightweight title to Patricio Freire. And, of course, that is a big-time rivalry among this group. Those brothers, the Pitbull brothers, the Freire brothers, and Michael Chandler are not good friends. So you can imagine the loss was very, very frustrating. But Michael Chandler throughout his career has been always such a consummate professional. And, man, it was interesting talking to him and just seeing kind of how he was feeling with, you know, I don't want to say the pressure, but not the result he wanted last time out, especially against that particular person, and how he was stepping in this time as well. And I love talking to Michael Chandler. I feel like he's always so open and honest and direct, and it was great to catch up with him. He was every bit the well-spoken interview that you thought he would be, and insightful as well. So here's what Michael Chandler had to say.
Well, let us know. What has life been like since May 11th for you?
Man, just a lot of the same. It's funny, too. You can always talk about the negatives of loss. You can talk about the pain of a loss, the anguish, the fears, the doubts, the insecurities, the discouragement. But there's a lot of freedom that comes in a loss, you know? And I think that's something that's not taken into consideration so much in this sport. You know, we think that life is defined by the wins and the losses and the ups and the downs. But truthfully, there's a lot of freedom that comes in a loss. There's only one way to go now. And I secretly love when my back's up against the wall. I secretly love when I'm coming off of a loss. You know, it's kind of that wrestler mentality. You lose a wrestling match on Wednesday, you get to redeem yourself on Saturday. You know, it's kind of how it always was, and I've always been like that. And, you know, losing to Patricio Pitbull is that's no – he's not a guy that loses much, you know. So it's not like I lost to a nobody. He's a world-class fighter, so my hat's off to him. Caught me in a good spot. I zigged when I should have zagged, and here we are. But, you know, now here I am about to fight at the Saitama Super Arena with Fedor and Rampage, so I'm excited about it.
That kind of mature approach to it, I mean, is that something that's come in your career? Because I think about you as an incredibly competitive guy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, is it difficult to not dwell on the results so much and realize that there is more to it?
It would be if you didn't know my past. I mean, I lost 3 fights in a row, 688 days without a win, because I lost that first fight to Eddie, and for some reason I let the loss and I let the negativity, I let it all affect me so much. And now the older I've gotten, the more I've realized, I think I've also just gotten more freedom in the sense that I realize I've been in the sport for 10 years. I've made a great living. I have a beautiful family at home that is being taken care of very well because of this sport and because of what the people before me have done. And I've seen so many people come into this sport who were supposed to be world champions and they end up fizzling out. Or I've seen so many great talents who've had really bad injuries and they have to quit and they have to retire early. And for me to be in this sport for 10 years, shoot, man, I feel like I'm fighting on borrowed time at this point, you know, because this has been such a great long career, and it's been such a great great time, a great experience. And I've done nothing but get better. Even through my losses, I gain experience and I gain fans. Every single loss that I've had, I've gained more fans than I would have if I would have lost. The way that I handled this last loss spoke volumes about my character and about who I am. And I've had so many hundreds of thousands of people tell me that, whether it be through social media or YouTube or whatnot. So it's been really cool. And it was not something that was, you know, cultivated overnight. I had to go through the experience of, that was my 5th loss now in this career. And the good thing is, the older you get, the more you realize that mixed martial arts is a what have you done for me lately business, but it's also a very forgiving business. You can be a guy who loses a fight, and then all of a sudden now you're fighting at the Saitama Super Arena co-main event and jerking the curtain for Fedor and Rampage. So here we go.
I was going to say, I mean, you've had some big moments in your career, but is this one right? I mean, is this special, like the fan inside you a little bit? I mean, is this one unique?
It is. And it's funny too, and I always say this about this sport, it's a tragedy that you don't get to enjoy the experiences more. You know, I can't enjoy the experience of fighting in Saitama Super Arena because whenever they open that curtain and I walk out there to the biggest crowd I've ever seen, and I remember all those huge fights in Pride and the history of this arena, fighting in Tokyo, Japan in front of a really, really awesome crowd, that is the Japanese MMA fan contingent. You can't let it get to you. You can't let it get to your head because then it goes to your heartbeat, your heart rate, and then it's going to affect the way that you fight. And then it's not until you get done with the fight that you can look back and say, man, that was pretty darn cool, you know? So unlike a lot of sports, you can't enjoy the moment as much as you want to. But this is awesome. This is a dream come true. I mean, obviously fighting in Madison Square Garden and L.A. and Hawaii and some of these huge markets that I've done in the U.S. is awesome and nothing short of amazing. But Saitama Super Arena in front of 40,000 people is a dream come true.
You don't strike me as a guy that has issues with motivation, but I do wonder, I mean, change of opponent, going from a much more known commodity into a much lesser one. Mm-hmm. Did that mess with your mindset at all?
I'd be lying if I said it didn't, if there wasn't a moment there where it affects you, you know. But I've, you know, unfortunately and fortunately, I've had a lot of experience with opponents getting hurt, injured, pulled out of the fight. I mean, this is just the nature of the business. You know, we go out there and fight and train with reckless abandon, and Benson Henderson is a tough guy, and I know he would never pull out of a fight unless he had an injury. So it was a day or two there where everything was up in the air, but they assured me they were going to keep me on the card, and they did. And here we are fighting Sidney Outlaw. And either way, it's not really a fight against Sidney Outlaw. It's a fight against myself. You know, it's a fight against my talents, my abilities, the calling on my life, being able to go out there and just perform the way I know I can perform, and the way I know I need to perform. And, you know, it's not the greatest test that kind of define your character. It's the times where you're able to slack off. I had every opportunity to slack off with a lesser opponent, allegedly. I had every opportunity to cheat on my diet because we're fighting at 161. I had every opportunity to take the easy way out and not do the extra rounds. But that's not the way my heart beats. That's not the way the blood flows through my veins. And I've done that since day one. And Sidney Outlaw is going to get the same treatment that Benson Henderson would or Khabib would, you know.
Anything that he does that does strike you as a little bit dangerous or something you got to be careful with?
You know, he's a big body. He's a wrestler. He's a black belt, you know, in jiu-jitsu. So he poses threats. He poses, and more than anything, he's the Rocky in this story, right? He gets the opportunity to fight a big name in a big market, in a big arena, in a big co-main event. I've been in that position, you know, 8 years ago against Eddie Alvarez, but I've been the guy now that has had to either defend the title or defend my ranking or defend my name in the last, you know, 20 fights or so. So this is familiar territory for me. Go out there, do exactly what I need to do, and fight like I've trained, and everything should take care of itself, hopefully.
I know you handle yourself as a professional, but are you on pit bull watch around the hotel, or how does that work?
A little bit. I know they're here in town. I mean, I've already thought if I run into him, I mean, I got nothing but respect for him and the family. What am I supposed to do here? You know, I lost the last fight. The way I see it, though, I'm 2-1 against the Pitbull brothers. So I'm still on the upper hand. And if we get the rematch, it happens. If we don't, like I said, I've told numerous media outlets now that they're like, is that the fight you want? You want that fight back? Do you want to fight him again? Get that back. I've never been a guy who's been motivated by getting back at another person. I sleep well at night knowing exactly who I am and exactly what I've accomplished in the sport and exactly where my skill set is and exactly what would happen if we stepped into the cage again. So I don't care whether or not that fight happens again. But if we see each other here in the hotel, I'm sure he's got some shenanigans he would like to pull. But I got to focus on Sunday.
Fair enough. Last thing for me. I mean, you mentioned kind of the freedom that comes along with it. Give me an idea. I mean, how do you see 2020? I mean, have you even thought it out yet? I mean, what do you want to accomplish?
2020 is a year of simplicity as well as violence and moving forward. You know, 2019, 2018, 2019 were tough years for me and my family because of how much stuff we put on our plates. My wife and I are two people we're so equally yoked that we want to continue to strive and create things and strive and acquire. For my wife, she just graduated. She's a doctor now. So she just graduated a couple weeks ago. So she was pursuing that. And we had our son 2 years ago. And then I built a gym, 10,000 square foot facility with overhead and employees and all kinds of stuff. And I've since simplified that. Bree just graduated from school. So 2019, we ended off with simplicity. 2020, we move into simplicity and significance and violence. You know, for me, I realized who I am and who I am not at the age of 32. now 33 now. So I kind of went to business school and life school, if you will. So I've learned exactly who I am and who I am not. And in order for me to be the most successful and efficient and effective individual, I need to have less things on my plate and more focused on the things that really make me tick, which is my platform, fighting, me as an athlete, and soaking up this last half a decade I have left in the sport.
Man, you can't do it much better than that. Michael Chandler, if there's ever a blueprint for how people should handle themselves or at least pattern themselves after, you know, you can't be exactly like somebody else, but to want to do it in the same way, man, that's not a bad guy to do it after, man. Physically, mentally, spiritually, I guess. You know, any way you want to look at it, man, the guy is an absolute professional. So, big fight for him, though. You know, he's going to want to get back in the win column, and all expectations are going to be on Michael Chandler here. I don't think there's any questions about that. Sydney Outlaw, as Michael Chandler pointed to, man, it's his Rocky moment. You know, the world's against him. So, interesting moment for Michael Chandler. He's got to deliver, and sounds like he's pretty excited about this opportunity. Below those two guys is a fight that I'm very interested in, Shinzo Anzai and Michael Venom Page. Michael Venom Page, of course, lost earlier this year in spectacular fashion to Douglas Lima. This is the first time I've had a chance to see him since then. He's been fighting abroad over in Europe the last two times out. Of course, now here in Japan, I was not at the – we had coverage of those Europe cards, but I wasn't there. So it was my first time to see MVP up close and just kind of talk to him about the loss and the effects. And man, I was I don't know if it was because, you know, and I think it probably has to do with the fact that, you know, the media expectations, the media obligations, fighting in Japan versus fighting in Europe, you know, where he's been on that scene for so long, and there's been these expectations, and he's been the center of every story, and he's been you know, under a microscope with every move he makes. You know, that's certainly not the case here in Japan. And you know, the media contingent, like I said, as far as the English interview, was just me and Casey and Esther from MMA Fighting. So, I mean, it was three of us. And I don't know, man. It's just the vibe that Michael Venom Page had. I really was feeling it today. I mean, not that I don't appreciate the showman and appreciate the bravado and the, you know, the – just, I guess, the showman, you know, that he can be. I love that. And I think he's going to get a chance to be that. I mean, I cannot wait to see this presentation of this card. I mean, we know that Bellator does the big in-stage setup, and they embrace, you know, the kind of over-the-top video elements and the walk-in and all that. And I mean, knowing that they're working with Ryzen on this card, I mean, Saki Kibara, of course, was behind Pride. So, I mean, this is, you know, I mean, this is a bastard stepchild of Pride, so to speak. So I am so intrigued by what we're going to see. And I think MVP, man, this could be an opportunity for him to really showcase himself. And I don't know, it was cool catching up, because this was not the brash MVP. This was not the over-the-top MVP. It was just an MVP that was kind of talking about the loss and where he stands since and how he gets back and what this weekend means to him. And I thought that was pretty cool. So here's Michael Venom Page.
Well, you are staying incredibly busy. I mean, was three fights in like 4 months or something
that?
So give me an idea. I mean, is this a concerted effort? Have you been pushing to stay like this? What's it like for you?
Yeah, I'm definitely pushing a lot more, like asking for stuff, you know. I think I kind of sat back a little bit too much before and kind of allowed other people to kind of navigate my profile now is big enough for me to start, you know, really demanding for certain things. You can obviously push so far, but yeah, I'm using it, man. I like to be this active. I want to continue this in 2020 as well. Just keep busy.
Is any of this activity a reaction to the loss? Like trying to like distance yourself from that
nah,
night?
Not really. It's more a drive to get back to that fight. You know, I'm trying to just get as many fights back, so I'm back into winning ways, and then get that rematch again. That's it.
Yeah. You know, I think we always knew, I mean, a loss is going to happen. It happens in MMA, right?
Yeah.
I think we always knew that the haters were probably going to come out when it did happen.
Normal.
What did you think? I mean, the backlash or what you saw, were you expecting it, or did it surprise even you?
It's weird, because initially, I had a lot of positive response, which I was weird, like pleasantly surprised by. I think, you know, the people that were messaging at the time, I think they watched the fight and they were like, actually, you know what? We didn't expect you to do so well, full stop, to begin with. So, you know, congratulations to you, even though you lost, you know, And I'm getting more haters now. So now that kind of gone, that's kind of in the back. You know, every time I have a fight, everyone's like, yeah, but Lima kicked your ass, man. It's like, yeah, okay. It's just part and parcel of it. It's never something that bothers me. I accept that you're always going to get that. But I only care about people that genuinely support who I am, my fighting style, and just enjoy watching me perform regardless of the results. So that's it.
You said it's been driving you to get back to that, you know, that rematch. So, I mean, in some ways, like, has it added to your motivation? I mean, was it at some point maybe were you not as driven because you were just, you know, beating everybody that stood in front of you?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I think things are just falling into place this way. Things are just happening this way. Since the fight, and it's just been active, I think this year full stop has been a busy year, but I prefer that. I definitely do prefer that, and like I said, I want to just continue this kind of momentum into 2020.
Japan, end of year.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like the perfect stage for you, right? I mean, when this opportunity came, does this feel like a kind of a special moment for you?
Oh, my days. Like, I've heard about the audiences over here anyway. And my goal, because I've heard, you know, it's almost like a tennis match over here. They're very appreciative of individual acts, of good performances and, you know, martial arts demonstration. So then they applaud it and then it goes silent again. And you're in an arena with like 37,000 people, but you can hear your coach. You can just hear everything, supposedly. And my goal is to just, I should be doing so much crazy stuff that these guys can't stop applauding, you know? There's just keep them as the most active you've ever heard it. So that's my goal.
I like it. What do you think about the opponent? I mean, Shinso, he's the kind of guy that could probably stay in your face and make 100%. This pretty exciting, right?
100%. He's a tough opponent, man. You can see by his record. You can see by where, you know, the levels that he's fought at. He's a wrestler type as well. Kind of like stand and trade. And like you say, in your face the whole night. Doesn't, you know, he won't fall easily. But I've said that about a few people as well. And I've changed them just because, again, they kind of get a bit like a deer in headlights when fighting me just because they haven't seen it before. So they're kind of like, well, this is a bit, you know, they hesitate, or they over-exaggerate and plow forward and end up running into something, you know, devastating. So we'll see. Definitely from standing here, looking at what I've seen, he's a tough opponent.
I know your style is just what your style is, but knowing, like you said, this kind of platform, this moment, I mean, do you even go out there saying, all right, we got to turn it up a little bit. We're going to be even crazier than normal.
You know what? Whatever energy I kind of go in, what I'm feeling at the time. It's also to do with the opponent as well. The second I see that bit of demoralization, you know, he's demoralizing. It's just like, oh man, I can see that he's lost look in his face. Then it allows me to be way more creative because I can get away with doing certain things. But it's always going to depend on the opponent to begin with. First things first, the fight's the most important thing. And the second I understand or feel my opponent, get a judge of the distance and all that kind of stuff, from then on, it's party time.
Nice. And I guess last thing for me, we know what you're looking for is that rematch. What do you think it's going to take? I mean, do you see the road? What's it going to take to get back to it?
No, it's weird because, you know, I had spoken about it directly after the fight, you know, said how close I felt. Or how well I felt I was doing before the KO came. Douglas Lima was speaking about me and said, you know, he's never fought anybody as fast as me before, and you know, it's exciting and he's looking forward to, you know, having that rematch. Second I won, he's like, nah, you have to fight some more people. I'm not even letting you come back that quick. So it's gonna happen either way. There's gonna be a point where he's not gonna be able to stop it. And like I said, if I keep doing what I'm doing now, stay active, stay busy, keep beating people, then 100% you can't stop it.
You mentioned earlier about, taking a little bit more control of your career, mm-hmm. a little bit like fighting more. Was that a problem in the past? Do you think you kind of just, you know, you won your fights and it's like, all right, cool, let me just kind of chill?
I think it seems to be a thing that everybody does. So you kind of fall into the same pattern. So, you know, even when you have a quick fight where, you know, like my last fight, KO, quick, I'm completely fine, nothing wrong with me. And you feel the need to be like, oh yeah, let's go on a holiday. And, you know, everyone has that kind of, and I get it because it's a long build up. So it's not even necessarily what you're doing in the cage in front of the people. It's what happens before that, the build up to that. We do a lot of training, we beat ourselves up. You feel like crap. You get in the cage, you have to perform. And then it's just a release of energy. You're like, oh, yeah. And then you do feel like the need to relax. But this time I was just like, nah, I want more. I want more while I feel fresh. Instead of, because a lot of times you start, you know, people start to get a bit more relaxed with their eating habits and this and that. And you, then when he goes back to training again, everything's very difficult. So I'm like, while I feel fresh, just keep going. There's no need for you to stop. Just the, you know, fought on a Saturday, Sunday off, which is kind of normal. And then Monday back training. And again, Sunday, I already messaged Scott Coker, so I'm back training Monday anyway. Back in, I'm just sitting on the sidelines, just like, just please, just tag me in, please, 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 please. So yeah, I'm happy I did that because I'm here today and I'm about to tick off another a box of a place that I really wanted to fight, you know, an audience I really wanted to fight in front of. Dublin was one of them. Japan is another one. I'm about to do that. I got Vegas and New York left.
When did this new energy come? Was this after the Lima loss, or did it just kind of?
I don't know. I just think it's been a lot. It's been quite a heavy year for last few years, and for me, it's more. I've learned, you know, no one cares as much about your progression as you do. So regardless, everyone that's there, even to support you, they still don't care as much as you do. So you have to just put in the work, and sometimes people hearing it from you makes it that much more effective than hearing it from managers and agents and coaches and this and all this, all the mess in between. It's just like, no, let me go straight to the source and say, look, you know, I want to fight again. You just tell me exactly when that's going to happen. I'm ready.
And just because we have cameras rolling and everything, this is a chance for you, but who do you train with? Who are your coaches? Where do you train at exactly?
Yeah.
Because, you know, everything's about, you know, it's about you, but, yeah. But I know there's a team that creates
you. Oh, man, definitely,
you.
Definitely, so, definitely.
Can you
London Shoot Fighters team, Alexis Demetriadis and Paul Ivins, some of the most amazing coaches that never want to be seen on camera. And that's one of the reasons why I love them as well, because it is more about us in terms of the fighters. They do not care. You see, I'm nothing against them, but I do see a lot of coaches that they enjoy being the face. They go and do book signings, they go and do seminars, they go and do this. My coaches are not into any of that stuff. It's all about the fighters. London Shoot Fighters, they were the first mixed martial arts gym in the UK. And they've just been around a long time and they know a lot. They fought with their fighters at every single level, at every single show that's ever existed, I feel. And it's just great to be a part of a team that has history like that as well. But I call them the scientists because they are obsessive about any little detail they want to get right, they correct it. And they push us hard. He's a person that will be in the gym before us, be in the gym after us, and he hits all the fitness machines. He's got all the records. So it's hard to say to someone like that, you know, when he's telling you to be in the gym at a certain time and you're tired, you can't say no to that when he's in there. He's not even fighting for anything, and he's in there before you. It keeps you motivated.
Right, so MVP making no attempt to hide it. Obviously, he knows where he wants to go. And, man, if he keeps tearing through people like he is, it's going to be hard to deny him. I know we wanted to face, you know, some more recognizable names, and that's understandable. But, you know, hey, even though it's not the biggest names, you know, staying busy I think probably isn't a bad thing. You know, racking up the highlights again, building the confidence again. You know, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. I don't think you can earn a title shot off of it. I don't think you can earn the Douglas Lima rematch off of it. But you can at least put yourself in a position where, you know, one fight or something like that can at least get you to that point. So, you know, and again, to me, I'm treating this like a one-off event, man. To me, I mean, I would love to see Bellator do this every year, to be honest. I mean, I've said it before. I wish the UFC would embrace this to a degree. You know, I wish they would, you know, host a pride card at the end of the year or something like that. But to me, this is a one-off event. I don't think you're really hurting your standings in terms of contendership or, you know, maybe necessarily even clinching anything. You know, you're just staying busy, you're entertaining, and you're doing something fun. And I think, to me, that's why – I mean, that's the way you look at this card. You don't have to say, ah, well, what about this matchup ranking-wise? You know, I don't think that's what this is about. You know, I think this is about something different than that, man. This is a throwback, and to me, it's just about being entertaining. So, like I said, I'm fired up for this card. Again, as a one-off, you know, as a throwback, you know, as a nostalgia-filled card. And hopefully everybody else is kind of embracing it the same way. Like I said, if they were asking to pay for it, that might be something different, but they're not. So enjoy it. All right, listen, we did get a chance to speak to Scott Coker as well. Scott Coker just stopped by for a little bit and was willing to give us a little bit of his time and talk to us about kind of a broad scope of things and just kind of where the overall direction of Bellator is moving and, you know, kind of what he sees in terms of a couple of divisions and other things along those nature, including this event itself. So here is Bellator president Scott Coker.
Well, Scott, I mean, a year-end show here in Japan, I mean, for a lot of MMA fans, I think this is like nostalgia. I mean, do you get that same sort of feeling?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I think about this event, it just makes me feel good all the way around because, you know, I am so thankful to what I learned here when I was working with K1. And when I think about, you know, 19 years later, you know, being here and coming back and doing a big fight like this, it's just such a great feeling. So nostalgia's here. Of course, we're having the biggest nostalgia fight probably in the history of MMA, you know, or one of them, right? Rampage versus Fedor, the fight that never happened. We're also bringing Michael Chandler, MVP, you know, Lorenz Larkin. So we're bringing a lot of great fighters that are going to, you know, hopefully have a great outing on the 29th.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are excited for it. Not many organizations work as closely as you're willing to do here in Japan. I mean, but talk about it. I mean, it comes with some challenges as well. I mean, there's a reason organizations don't do it. So how's the experience been so far? And do you feel like this is, you know, a one-time thing? Or could we maybe be starting a tradition here on New Year's Eve?
I mean, really, we haven't even talked about that. Sakibar and I have just said, look, let's do something that's going to be historic, that'll be memorable, that will let's bring all these great fighters together. You know what? He's got a great event on the 31st, and he's going to sell out. And I believe we'll sell out on the 29th. So here is a market and a promoter that can, you know, sell 40,000 tickets in two nights. It is unbelievable, you know? And so to me, it's still, you know, the market that it all started in, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, there's a time where all the greatest fighters in the world fought here, right? And eventually branched off and they got bought. But I was here during the heyday of K1 and Pride, and you'd walk into a stadium in Tokyo Dome, there's 50, 60,000 people. It's a very rare location that things that have happened here, I haven't seen happen anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, no question about it. This Fedor retirement tour is officially launching, right?
Yeah.
So give us an idea. I mean, how do you envision this thing playing? How long does this tour last? Where do we go? What are we talking about here in terms of Fedor?
Well, you know, how I feel about Fedor is he's a very special fighter, a very special person in the landscape of MMA. And he is a legend. And he was, the greatest heavyweight of all time. And saying that, you know, I feel like he should be honored and treasured on his way out. And he should go out on his own terms. And that's really what this is all about. I got to give him that respect that he deserves. And we said we're going to sign him to a 3-fight retirement tour. And this is the first stop. This will be the last time he fights in Japan. So if they want to see him live, they have to come down and check him out. You know, against a legendary fighter like Rampage, who got his start here, Fedor got his start here. It's just going to be a great night. But getting back to Fedor, the second fight, hopefully, if he is okay, doesn't get hurt, you know, maybe we could fight towards, you know, late fall or early fall. Location, don't know. But in my mind, the second fight will be someplace in Europe or the Middle East, and then the third fight will be in Moscow, maybe sometime next year. That's the game plan, because I would love to do a fight in Moscow with Bellator, with Fedor's retirement fight.
It'd be pretty cool.
Yes.
With this dual cards, I'm kind of interested. I mean, you've got Patrycki on the 31st. Mm-hmm. These kind of crossover fights, I wonder, with you and Saki Kabara, is there a little rivalry going on? I mean, you kind of have a little professional zing at each other.
Well, you know what? Honestly, I felt that, you know, there's no way Horiguchi's going to beat Caldwell. That's what I thought until he beat him twice. So you know, to me, we have to come back with a vengeance here and redeem. But in all fairness, it's all in good sportsmanship. It's all in, you know, good martial arts competition. But to me, we want to win too. He wants to win. I talked to him last night, and you know, he feels like his guys have a good chance. And I said, well, you know, I can't say anything because, you know, you beat us up last time. So let's see. But I feel like we got a good roster here to compete with them and you know, let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah. You mentioned Horiguchi. I mean, the way that whole situation played out, does it make you hesitant to involve titles and that sort of thing moving forward? I mean, it was a very unfortunate situation. No, I don't think anybody could have seen coming. But does it make you a little concerned about belts being on the line?
You know what? I'll tell you. I guess deep down the answer is yes, but it won't stop me from doing crazy things that, you know, I think the fans want to see. And, you know, to me, it was a lot of fun doing that promotion. Will we do it again? Absolutely. And it's just unfortunate for Horiguchi, who, you know, got hurt and he couldn't continue. And so, you know, these things happen in this sport. As you know, people get hurt. We'll just start ramping up next year for a new champion as Horiguchi gets healthy. He might be out for a year almost, right? So we're definitely going to crown a new champion at 135. But the process of that, I'm not sure how, you know, exactly how we're going to do it or what we're going to do, but we'll figure out something. And, you know, just maybe single elimination fights that, you know, lead to a title fight, and that might be it.
Nice. Another name that we thought we might see out here was Ryan Bader. I think that would have been a fun crossover. Mm-hmm. It didn't end up happening. What's the update on him? It's been a while since we got a chance to see him. So since we didn't see him here, what's the update on him?
Yeah, Ryan, my understanding is he wants to fight sometime in March, and he's going to defend his 205 belt. That's what he wants to do. So we're going to do that, and we'll hopefully have location, opponent, all the details to now sometime, you know, early in January.
Do you still see him defending both belts? I mean, is that still something he wants to try and do?
Yeah, he's going to defend both belts until he loses one. I mean, that's just how it's going to be. So, but we have a lot of guys, you know, to give him some good competition. So I think that him coming down to 205 started off, and then I'd like to keep him busy next year. I'd like to have him fight at least three times, maybe four times next year.
Nice. I want to ask you about Lovato as well. He's been on the sidelines for a little bit. What's the next move for him?
You know what? I'm not sure. We haven't really been talking too much, but, you know, come January, everybody's going to be reaching out about, you know, what am I fighting? So, you know, we've been focusing on Hawaii, which was two amazing events. The troops event for the USO was just really, really, it was just really special being there and doing that fight for the guys that, you know, the men and women that defend this country or defend the USA. And then Alima, she put on a great show, fought a tough, you know, Kate Jackson, she was scrappy, you know, she put on a good fight. I thought she was going to tap at some point, but she brought it, man. So, but then we're focusing on this fight. This is a big fight for us, a big event, Saitama Super Arena. Come on, that's like Madison Square Garden in America. This is the Mecca of martial arts fighting. You know, this is it. So to me, to have a Bellator event here at Saitama Super Arena with all the fighters that we have here, and then the fighters that will be fighting, you know, against the Ryzen fighters. And I think we're going to sell out. So to me, Sakibara told me that this will be the most successful event that a foreign company has come to America, come to Japan and put on as far as ticket sales go in the history of this country, other than a Japanese fight promotion company.
So does that give you a little special bit of pride to say to be able to accomplish something like that?
Well, you know, it's funny you say pride, right? that's pretty good. I like that, John. That's pretty good. Dun, dun, dun. But you know what? It's, of course, I mean, you know, this is the Mecca, man. This is where it all started. What other country could you go to, let's say in the 90s and 2000s, where you could go to Pancras, Shudo, you go to Rings back then, you could go to Pride, you can go to K1, you could go, you know, to probably 10 different karate organizations competing, Kyokushin, Seido Kaikan. I mean, it was something you could go someplace every week and watch martial arts fighting. And so I don't know of another culture like that. You know, this is truly the Mecca. So to come here, perform at the level that we're performing, to sell this building out, it's really an accomplishment. I think it's something that's definitely we get to chuck one up on the bucket list here.
I know we're all excited this, so I don't want to lean too far into 2020, but I did want you to look ahead. Bud and Cyborg, mm-hmm. Great way to kick off 2020 for you. I got to wonder for you, especially knowing the role in women's MMA that you've played. Mm-hmm. Is this an especially exciting one for you? Kind of champ versus champ, kind of, you know, bringing in an all-time.
Yeah.
Like, is this a special one for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Listen, Cyborg is the greatest female fighter of all time. I don't care what anybody says. I was there in the beginning too, and I've seen it all unfold, and it's a much different environment not today than it was back. But I know who's been dominating for the last 10 years and who's been destroying people for the last 10 years. So, you know, 10 years from now, we can have a different conversation, right? See how far different ladies can take it. But as far as today, you got the greatest female fighter of all time fighting Julia Budd, who to me is going to give Cyborg everything she can handle. And some people underestimate Julia Budd, but I'm telling you, this girl can hang. She is physical. I'm not sure if you saw the stare down, but she is a physical, you know, great stand-up, great wrestling. She's going to be, there's going to be a certain physicality, I think, that she brings, that Cyborg's got to be in shape, and she's got to be hungry, and she's got to come to really throw it down, because Julia's going to bring it. And so I'm looking forward to that big clash. And I think that, you know, it's a great way to start the year, right? January 25th in LA at the Forum. Great way to start the year. And we have a great undercard in that fight as well. But that just leads to, you know, 30 fights in the year of 2020. So we have our hands full, and we got a lot of events going on. And it's exciting. It's an exciting time to be in the Bellator business right now.
Your European expansion has done very, very well. And I'm just curious kind of what your thoughts are for that in 2020. I've heard some people saying maybe you should start crowning European champions, you know, have that kind of level, because you've had such success there. Is that a possibility? What do you think for Europe?
Yeah, you know, I think that the boxing model does that, right? They have European champions, or they have, you know, different champions in different territories. We haven't decided exactly, you know, if we're going to follow that model, but it's definitely an option. You know, the fights that we do in London, Dublin is so much fun. I mean, it's just a party going on in Dublin. And then next year, the two new cities, I believe, will be Amsterdam. We'll definitely go to Amsterdam next year. And we're trying to fit the Stockholm in there. So those are the two new cities. Along with, we'll go back to Tel Aviv again. We're going to go back to Milan for sure. We already have a date for that fight. So, you know, it's going to be an 8-city tour, and it's going to be built for the European market. We'll sprinkle some of our guys from here in there. Or the girls from here to there. But, you know, for the most part, it's going to be a European series made for European television to build new European fans and hopefully find a new, you know, a new star out of the series. And then we can fight them back and forth in different continents. And you know what? We are going to do the same here, right? So Asia is going to be a big market for us. I would say 2021, 22, 23. I look at Japan, Korea, China as a market that we want to be in and have a good reach. Again, starting an Asian series, maybe a 6-8 fight series on its own, and build a business within the territory that's sustainable, that has a television deal, sponsors, that airs primarily here in Asia with some distribution in America or different parts. But, you know, don't be surprised in the next, you know, 2-3 years that, you know, Bellator will have maybe 50-60 fights a year, because of all the territories we're going to go to.
So this Asia series, I mean, how soon could we see that? Are you talking about trying to launch something this year, or 2020, or is that too soon?
Yeah, this is maybe towards the end of 2020, but maybe 2021 is probably more realistic because, you know, trying to get into China, it's a little tricky. We got to, you know, find a partner there. That's just how it works. We've been approached by 2 or 3 different companies, legitimate companies, to go there and partner with them. Korea is, you know, I mean, I was born there, so it's something we have to do. Otherwise, my aunt won't talk to me anymore. And then, you know, Japan is such a strong market. I think that, you know, these are the Asian territories that we're going to go into. And then the last territory, you know, I think in the future will be Latin America, right? I think Brazil, Argentina, Chile, Mexico, that'll be a market. So if you add 8 more fights on the European series, I'm sorry, 8 more fights on the Asian series, 8 more fights, that's in Latin America, that's 16 more fights on top of the 30 fights they're doing. I mean, it's going to be a lot of work, and we're going to need a lot more staff, and we'll probably open up some offices, but, you know, just don't tell my staff that yet, because I don't think they're ready to hear that.
last thing for me, let's talk about 2020, the idea on the U.S. side. Grand Prix, ideas, I mean, anything fun that you can tease out there right now that
you know
can happen?
What I talked about in Hawaii was, when I look at, you know, the 125-pound female division with Alima, I really feel like there's some stars ready to get bust out of that division. And when I look at Velasquez, and I look at Laura and Lima, I look at, you know, just the landscape of that division. To me, I'm not committing to that, but it's very tempting. And I'm going to go back, talk to my guys, talk to, you know, our partners of ICOM and see what they want to do. So I think that it might be something that, you know, that we are going to be ready to announce sometime, I don't know, say maybe in February. But I think the next tournament might be a female division tournament.
You think we see any TV changes in 2020?
That's going to be an interesting one. You know, we're working on a lot of things right now. I really don't want to talk about it, but I am very excited. Let's just put it that way.
Nice. Last thing, I guess, just this.
Okay.
How excited are you overall for this dual event type scenario? I mean, do you feel like this is going to be like a historic moment for me? Is this, where does this rank overall in terms of the shows that you've promoted?
I mean, you know, I know you guys have been here before. There's nothing like walking into Saitama Super Arena, which to me is like the Yankee Stadium of martial arts fighting. And to walk in there and have, you know, 20,000 people there watching, you know, the fights, it's going to be unbelievable. And this is definitely something that is historic for the company. It's a big piece of business for the company. And to come here and do it as a Bellator event was something that was really important to us. I think that, you know, we checked that off the box. And let's parlay this into something that's sustainable, that we come back here and really build a business here.
Quick question. How are the rule sets? Do the post-slams after the Bellator main card, are they the same rule? Is it going to be under the same rules?
Yeah, my belief was that those will be under the Ryzen rules. So once we finish the broadcast and Fedor and Rampage finish the fight, that's the end of the Bellator event. And then Ryzen will throw their fight post-slam cards, and they're going to tape it. It'll air on the YouTube channel. But it will be the Ryzen rules is what I my understanding. Is that correct? Okay, there you go.
And how can American fans view the post-slams?
It's going to be on the Bellator YouTube channel.
Oh, they will be. Okay.
Yeah, so it's free. You can just, you know, check it out, and it'll be right on there. So it'll be available right after the fights. I think it'll probably be close to 3:00.
And lastly, real quick, Rory McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I guess, for a lot of fans, kind of a surprise, him mm-hmm. going to PFL.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the Rory McDonald experience in Bellator?
Listen, he has some great fights for us. I really like the kid, and he has some good fights. He has some tough fights. He had a lot of tough fights in Bellator. And, you know, I just felt like it was the right timing for us to maybe take a step in a different direction, which we did. And, you know, I wish him well. I think he'll have great success there. And, you know, it's something that, you know, I have no regrets, and neither will he, and we'll move forward. And when you look back at Rory's time in Bellator, you know, you'll say he had two great fights with Douglas Lima. One was phenomenal. One was a good fight. He had a tough fight with our guy in San Jose, John Fitch. And, you know, and Gegard didn't work out for Rory with Gegard. So I think he's had a lot of fights that got his hands full here. So, you know, these things happen, man. It's going to happen you know, to whether it's us or it's the UFC or whoever else, it's going to happen. I mean, people are going to come and people are going to go. And so that's just the nature of the industry right now.
All right, so Scott Coker always giving you just enough, you know, he'll never drop them big bombs on you, but he'll give you just a little nugget here and there. I mean, listen, the confirmation of the Asia Fight Series, it's something they've been talking about for quite a while, but it sounds like, you know, and this does make sense. It's kind of a launching off point of that, but, you know, it sounds like they want to add the you know, more committed than ever, I would say, to that Asia Fight Series that they've been talking about for a while. And, man, the way the Europe Fight Series has been successful for them, and, you know, I know they've gotten some criticism for how the TV cards are structured. I think that's going to change. You know, there's some things working behind the scenes. I think most people realize in the Viacom and Bellator universe that Paramount is not the greatest fit for them. You know, there's no shoulder programming. They're there by themselves as a sports property. The brand Paramount, while it means something in the movie industry, I mean, it really doesn't have any kind of a tie to it. So nobody will really talk about it in front of the camera as much. I mean, as you can see from Scott Coker himself there. But I think there's going to be some changes in the broadcast structure next year. It's just a hunch more than anything. I haven't heard of anything of confirmation. But I think everybody realizes it's not a perfectly ideal scenario. But in the meantime, you know, you're kind of trying to position things the way you can. And I think they're continuing to grow. I mean, to sit back and go, well, we can't do anything in terms of growing until we've got this new TV deal in place, that doesn't help anybody. And so they're continuing to press forward and continue to develop out there. So good stuff. Bellator is you know, still, I mean, the UFC has a very, very strong lead, of course, in this field. But Bellator continues to do their own thing and continues to try to be a nice, viable competitor, at least for athletes, if nothing else. And I think they're doing their best at doing that. So all you can do is focus on you. That's one thing that Scott Coker has always said, like, man, I cannot worry about what the UFC is doing or anybody else is doing. I can only worry about what I'm doing. So interesting stuff there. Man, you know, the Rory McDonald stuff, I think, has kind of remained a big story as well. You know, behind the scenes, it sounds like, you know, Bellator did want to make a play. You know, they did make an offer. I think there was it was said at some point that no offer was made. That's not my understanding. An offer was made. They were willing to keep him, but negotiations kind of broke down, and Rory's going to the PFL now. But I will say this, and I don't mean this as any kind of slight at Rory McDonald, because he's very much a professional. He's put on some fantastic performances for us, and he's always nothing but kind in our interactions. But, you know, when he left the UFC, what did the UFC say? Hey, we keep who we want to keep, you know. And when he left Bellator, what did Bellator say? Hey, we keep who we want to keep. And I don't mean that as any kind of slight at Rory McDonald at all, but if both those organizations in a row were saying, listen, man, we're good, you know, wish him all the best, but we're happy. We're very comfortable with this decision. I guess on the one hand, you could probably write that off. I mean, what organization is going to go, oh, we really wanted him, but man, we couldn't pull the offer together. We weren't strong enough. We couldn't make a bid. You know, I mean, I guess they're never going to admit that. But the truth is, both organizations could have made stronger plays, and they didn't. They made the play they felt was right and then decided it wasn't worth any more than that. I guess kudos to Rory's team, if that means they're getting the biggest offer that's on the free agent marketplace, right? I mean, I guess ultimately that's what you want to do. You want to push somebody to the limit and find somebody else that's willing to pay more. But, man, there's only so many places you can go. You can't burn that many bridges. I mean, if the same situation happens in the PFL, where do you go from there? I mean, is LFA going to make a big offer for you? Or CFFC? So, I don't know. I feel like there's not too many options. And maybe that's fine with Rory. It doesn't sound like he knows, you know, he wants to keep competing too much longer, but I just worry that he's not going to have a lot of options on the table. The other thing I'm interested to see how this plays out with PFL is just how big of an impact it makes, because I think one of the biggest thing of becoming a free agent and signing with a new organization is, you know, all the matchmaking. You know, fans can say, ooh, maybe they'll make this fight. Maybe they'll make this fight. But, you know, you can't do that with the PFL. I guess you get a little bit of creativity with the regular season, and I suppose you can make those matchups how you want, but you're not going to want to make your marquee matchups with those regular season matchups, right? I mean, are you going to want to necessarily put Rory against who you feel is your top competitor in the field? Because if so, that's kind of giving away a potential final matchup, right? A one versus two. Or at the very, you know, if it's not doing that, it's at least putting two of your, you know, most competitive guys against each other, meaning that they're probably going to do the most damage to each other, right? So, I don't know. You know, I've said all along, I love the PFL model. I really do. I've found more joy in the standings and stuff than I thought I would, and I think it's been cool that, you know, people have been able to write million-dollar checks, and I'm looking forward to watching the finals on the 31st. I don't know how well it bodes towards big free agent signees. I don't know if it's really a good fit for them or not. I don't know. There's no guarantees, right? I mean, certainly I think, you know, Rory is being given guaranteed fees bigger than anybody else in the organization. But, you know, there's no guarantee that you make it to that million-dollar final. And there's no guarantee that you get to see the fights you want to see. And, of course, you know, Rory fighting twice in a night. I don't know. A lot of interesting variables there that I'm excited to watch play out and see if they play to the PFL's advantage or not, see if they play to Rory's advantage or not. So, anyway, all right, listen. By the way, we're doing a little bit of pre-fight coverage here for Ryzen 20 as well. And that's the show that's going to open up New Year's Day, or New Year's Eve, I should say, rather, of course, in Japan. And they'll close that night with PFL 2019. I will not be here live for Ryzen 20, but we'll have some interviews with some of the competitors as well. That'll actually be done tomorrow after the official weigh-ins. So couldn't include those today, but some interesting matchups there. We'll have a little bit of coverage there. Of course, we will have coverage of Ryzen as well. A fantastic card there, man. Some title fights on the line. If you're a fan of the Ryzen product, then you already know what I'm talking about. I don't even have to tell you. If you're not, this might be one that's worth keeping an eye on. You know, it's tough to watch it in the middle of the night, of course, but those usually do stream live on Fight TV. And if nothing else, you can catch the results at MMA Junkie. We'll make sure and have you covered on those. So, and of course, it's got that Bellator crossover as well. You know, they've got the bouts on there as well where they're matching up with each other. So, it's a fun card, man. I love what Ryzen and Bellator is doing. I'm happy that I'm going to be home for New Year's with my family, but I wouldn't have hated staying here to cover both cards. I think it's really cool to see, you know, the organizations working together. Of course, Saki Kibara and Scott Coker have had a relationship for a long time, and I think that'll continue. As Coker said, you know, no discussion of whether this will be an every year kind of thing, but I would certainly be open to it and excited for it, that sort of thing. So we'll see how it plays out moving forward. But anyway, I will be back next week. I believe if all goes well, myself and Cold Coffee will actually finally be back together next week. I know that was originally the intention this week. This was kind of late notice for me to come out here and cover Bellator. I actually wasn't expecting to do it, but I'm happy to do it. Glad to be wrapping up with Toby Gio, and hopefully we'll be seeing you on Fight Night. In the meantime, thanks for listening.